You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM broadcasting from Burnaby.
From coast to coast to coast, you're listening to Terra Informa.
Welcome back to Terra Informa. I'm Shelley Jodwin.
And I'm Andrea Gallivan.
And we'll be your hosts for the next half hour of environmental news from across Canada and around the world.
This week, Terra Informa Shelley Jodwin interviewed Joshua Benin, a sustainable housing project manager with the Alberta Rural Development Network. They discuss ARDN's aim to create housing that is both sustainable and affordable. But first, here are some headlines from around the world.
Get your gardening gloves and hats ready because May 7th to 13th is International Compost Awareness Week. Celebrate the value of compost by getting out to your local community garden, your backyard garden, or your city's botanical garden. Keep your ears open for any cool composting-related events happening in your city. In Edmonton, we're lucky to have the Compost School, as in compost is cool, but also school. Good one, City of Edmonton. Despite the cheesy name, the Compost School has everything an Edmontonian could want to help you start your own composting operation, whether it be a large backyard bin or a small bin of worms. Their hours begin on May 13th and are open from 10 to 4 p.m. on weekends and holidays until Labor Day. Find them in real life between the John Jansen Nature Center and Fort Edmonton Park, and on the internet at facebook.com/compostschool, spelled S-C-O-O-L. I really need that compost school. For listeners not in Edmonton, check out your city's website or check out the Compost Council of Canada's website at compost.org/english/compost_week.htm. A number of other compost-related links will be posted on our website at terrainforma.ca. Happy gardening.
If you have an eye for design and are keen to draw inspiration from nature, then you should check out the third annual Alberta Biomimicry Workshop that will be happening here on the University of Alberta campus on June 24th and 25th. Registration is $150, but there is a discount rate for students. You can find more information about this event at terrainforma.ca. You might be thinking to yourself, what is biomimicry exactly? Biomimicry, in this context, is drawing inspiration from the natural world. For example, the beak of kingfisher birds have provided the blueprint for more aerodynamic designs and trains. If you're interested in learning more about how nature has influenced human design, check out www.asknature.org or look at the Biomimicry Institute's website at biomimicry.org. The Alberta Rural Development Network, ARDN, connects post-secondary institutions and helps fund rural development projects. Back in January 2017, Terra Informa Shelley Jodwin interviewed the project manager, Joshua Benin, of the ARDN Sustainable Housing Initiative. They discussed how the ARDN is creating affordable housing that is environmentally and financially sustainable in seven rural communities in Alberta. Since then, ARDN hosted the Rural Homelessness and Housing Conference on April 4th in Nisku. Stay tuned to learn about creative solutions for rural homelessness, including shipping container housing, mixed market housing, and mixed community housing.
Alberta Rural Development Network was created back in 2009 by Alberta's 21 post-secondary institutions, and it was created to fund different projects to further rural development, the growth of rural development. So communities that might not, you know, necessarily have the resources or capacity to do certain things, or the ability or the wherewithal on who to contact to look into or investigate a problem, and not only investigate the problem, but implement the solution and make sure that it just doesn't sit on the shelf. We kind of now focus on vulnerable populations. We have a project to engage Aboriginal youth in the workforce. We actually administer the federal funding for homelessness in rural Alberta. We've been doing that for a number of years now. And we also have a project, Access to Justice, which is done in both official languages. And then the last one is a, you know, business development and diversification for communities on how to attract new businesses, or if they have a business within a community that might be kind of stagnant, looking how we can help those businesses continue to thrive and grow. So originally, it was a three-year project. It was funded by the Alberta Rural Development Fund, and I think the average funding per project was about $10,000. And that speaks to our larger belief that a dollar spent in rural goes much farther than a dollar spent in an urban center. You can accomplish much more. It costs a lot less to do things in rural communities than it does in urban centers. After that three-year funding ran out, our membership, so originally we were, the membership was 21, all 21 post-secondaries, is now down to 9. And now we don't have grant funding from the province. We actually fund ourselves through, project funding. So, for example, with the Sustainable Housing Initiative, we've helped bring in more than $330,000 in a year.
Holy cow.
And that does a lot for rural communities. So that's actually helped seven rural communities. It will have completed seven analysis of needs and demand, seven business plans, and then a number of other things like financial viability, some preliminary site plans, and building permit drawings for certain communities. So we've done a lot with that, and we're continuing to move forward.
That's some really important work. I grew up in a rural community, so I definitely can feel how much impact that sort of stuff will have. And the focus on vulnerable communities is especially big, I think, because often rural communities, there's a sentiment that they get less access to resources and things like that. But I'm
Absolutely.
Sure the impact is so much harder on those vulnerable communities than even the general populace.
The communities do a really good job to kind of lean on each other, but there needs to be more. There needs to be more investment from both the federal and the provincial government, and in affordable housing, that's one aspect, but there's other areas too that they can improve on too.
Yeah, so one of the ways I guess that you guys are targeting this is through a strategy for eco-friendly, affordable housing in rural communities. So I was pretty excited to read about this. Do you mind kind of giving us this spiel and telling us what it's about?
Actually, originally when I moved out to Alberta, I knew I wanted to do something to help vulnerable populations. And actually, my original focus was at-risk women in the city of Edmonton. And when I started doing some research and seeing where some of these vulnerable populations were coming, specifically the homeless, I realized that the majority of people that are homeless at Edmonton are coming from actually outside of Edmonton. And the majority of that group is actually from rural Alberta. I'm a strong believer in prevention as opposed to intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as a society, we focus a lot on intervention. And I had the opportunity with ARDN to start looking at how we could do something and see if there was an opportunity. So in 2015, we put out a call for expressions of interest just to find out if there was actually a need within rural Alberta, and more than 35 communities came back to us within a month saying that they were, at varying levels of need, and were very interested in pursuing projects.
Wow, that's a lot.
it was really interesting when I first started this. I said, you know, we're going to have one solution, kind of a one size fits all cookie cutter. It's going to be great. And it's just going to, it will work. And I went into the first rural community and walked out a couple hours later and realizing that I couldn't have been more wrong. Each community is different. Each community is going to, you know, they'll lead their own process. They just need the help to get there. So they need some financial help. They need all the pieces kind of brought together for them to kind of pick what they want it to look like or what they're comfortable with, and unbiased guidance on how to get there. You know, the focus that we've had is that here's the process, you know, the best path forward. Here are all the options that you can look at and trying to identify what you want to do and how to get there and what it looks like. So the shipping container model, for example, is just one application for, you know, a construction type. If somebody wanted to do conventional or if they wanted to reuse an existing building, you know, at the end of the day, our focus is to help people build sustainable housing. So there's other elements that we'll incorporate into that. Mm-hmm. Or you know, try and encourage groups to incorporate into that. By no means are we forcing people to do specific things.
The shipping containers was one thing that I was going to ask you about. I personally think shipping container housing sounds really awesome, and it would be a neat way to live, and certainly is an exciting way to repurpose something that we have a lot of already. Can you talk a little bit about some of the benefits of using shipping containers, and especially if any special attention is paid to the fact that we live in such a cold climate and shipping containers are made out of steel?
So people first hear shipping containers and they freak out. And, you know, you see a lot of stuff on the internet. You see a lot of stuff on even TV. And what we're talking about doing with shipping containers isn't what you typically see. You know, there's buildings that have already been built with shipping containers. And you would never know inside or out that it was actually a shipping container. So the idea is to use the shipping container as a structural component, an element of the building, but it's not a aesthetic component. It's not an architectural detail. The sole purpose of it is, you know, a steel structure that's non-combustible. You know, steel is, in my opinion, superior to other options out there, such as wood. And, you know, you're not confined to a certain width or length. The only real constraint you have is height within the container. Now, in terms of insulating, these containers can be insulated just, you know, the exact same way you would insulate a home, you know, maintaining a thermal break. And it's totally code compliant. So there's no issue there. Like I said, you're not actually seeing the container. When you start seeing the container, that's when you have thermal transfer.
Mm-hmm.
But in this situation, that's not an issue. And you would never know, like I said, you would never know that it was, there's a hotel that's just been built in Bruderheim, and it's been all made out of containers, and they have a modular elevator inside of it. So, motels typically, you know, the larger chains have pretty big standards in terms of the finishing. So if it works for them, I'm very confident that we can make it work for us.
Wow, cool. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, and you touched on this a bit earlier, but there is a lot of geographical distance and variation in the communities that are actually being built in, right? So is there anything that you see a lot of creative license being taken on or already kind of emerging?
I mean, what's interesting is that you get a lot of the same kind of initial challenges in the front end. People are afraid of the unknown. We've done some community consultations, we've done some community surveys, and what's interesting is that people start talking about, you know, the crime rates and property values and what are the impacts. But then once we start getting into it and when they start actually writing down, you know, some of their comments or concerns, the way we go through it is to educate them about what affordable housing truly is and isn't. And, you know, what are the failings of some of the projects that have, you know, hurt communities in terms of driven property values down and increased crime rate. So, I mean, when you talk about creative license, the first step is just educating the community on what the options are. We're starting to get in the stage where, yes, where it's almost like it's going to be a baton that we hand off and they just start running with it. We'll continue to facilitate, but they're then now the project leader. But the first step is education on, you know, what affordable housing is and how to get there and how to make it sustainable. You know, we talk about environmental sustainability, but we also have to talk about long-term management. How is this project, is it going to rely on continual subsidies from either the local municipality or the province? To me, that isn't sustainable. We look at a mixed model. So what I mean by that is having people that are, you know, below market rent and market rent. So you're not kind of putting one income bracket into a housing unit. It's going to be created of, you know, people that are making $75,000 and maybe $30,000. And that's a community. You can't just, you know, one education, one income level and one gender into an apartment building doesn't foster a community. It needs to be diverse. And that's what we're really, that's our project. That's the model we're really trying to, you know, bring to the table.
That's really exciting because I think often people will expect that, especially in terms of income brackets, that if you're building affordable housing, then that's going to go to people who can't afford the housing that already exists. So how does that work, I think, like on a management level, if you're mixing income levels like that?
What we do is just to give you an example, like we take 60-40%. So 40% would be affordable housing, 60% would be market housing. So somebody that has a steady job and a good income and is, let's call it, you know, making again between $50,000 and $75,000, and it's costing, you know, well below 30% of their income to pay for the rent and all their rental costs because they have a dual income or whatever the situation might be, they would be the market. So they'd be at the market. So whatever their average rent within that community or that neighborhood would be, they would be paying that rent. And the other 40% would be below market or the affordable component. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of their rent would actually be subsidized by the market rent.
So that's how you get it to be financially sustainable.
Yeah, that's one element that we look at is, you know, there's kind of three factors. It's what are your management costs? What's your revenue? And what's the initial investment that you're putting down as a down payment? Those are the three factors. So you have to tweak all those numbers to get them to the right place. Obviously, the initial investment, so how much money you put down, is a huge one, because that will dictate how much it costs per year to service your debt, but also how much revenue you're bringing in based on is it a 60-40 split, is it you know 50-50, you know, what are the opportunities, is it a one bedroom, is it a two bedroom, is it a three bedroom, because each one brings in different amounts of money. But the idea is that, you know, 60%, if that's what you go into, 60% will be market and 40% would be below market or affordable, and then, you know, it subsidizes the market rent, you know, helps subsidizes the affordable component.
So switching gears a little bit, one of your partners is in Lac-La-Biche Portage College, where the housing initiative targets students specifically. So can you speak to how that might change the project there at all?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, again, originally we had a kind of a very clear focus, and we've seen that the need is kind of it's just not just one demographic. With Portage College and Lac-La-Biche as well as Boyle, because they're actually leading the project in both those communities. The idea is, okay, they know that they have a need for their students, which is fantastic. So they're very focused on addressing that need in the coming years. But is there an opportunity within the community to work with the community, so the municipality, the other agencies and not-for-profits that are trying to address some of the challenges of, you know, maybe it might be people fleeing violence, it might be the men's shelter. There's a number of different agencies or organizations within the community that are trying to address, you know, putting people in housing, and they don't have any housing available. Mm-hmm. And especially with the pipeline that's just been announced, you know, rental costs there are going to start going up. They're really looking, they're exploring that as an option. The first and second quarter of next year, they will continue to talk to these groups and try and define everybody's roles and put that project together and solidify it, and then ideally, you know, break ground within the next year or so.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be a really awesome community building opportunity to integrate the student population with some of these other groups.
And what's interesting about it is, because you might, and then, like we've talked, there's so many different options there. It's right now we're almost in the brainstorming phase of that. We've put together all the financials and the need, and we've identified a number of different things, but now we're talking within the community and saying, you know, what do we want this project to truly look like? And, you know, is there going to be a mentoring component? Do you want to have senior, you know, people that are senior citizens that don't have, there's no room in the seniors lodge, so they can come there and there can be a mentoring program with students. You know, they have a nursing program at the college. Are they able to provide some assisted living for seniors? So there's a number of different opportunities where there's some, you know, practical applications that they could actually apply one way or the other. And that project, it's about a 90 unit building. So it's a very large project. Mm-hmm. In a lot of these other communities, we're talking about between 10 and 30 units at a maximum.
Okay.
In Portage College's case, we're talking about, you know, 90 units.
I think it's really exciting, the opportunity to get some kind of intergenerational community building. Students and seniors are often people that are seeking out community. And you know, you see examples around the world of you know, students living for free in seniors' home if they buddy up with a senior for 10 hours a week and that sort of thing, right?
Right now, senior citizens that are put into seniors' homes or assisted living facilities go through a number of different mental health issues, and we're seeing a growing mental health problem on campus as well. So again, putting one group of individuals, you know, and segregating them is not a community. That does not foster community. If somebody's away from their family, whether that be a senior citizen or a student, it might be nice to have, you know, some young kids around, or it might be nice to have somebody that you can go to and talk to and get their input and not feel like you're necessarily going to be judged, or they might be like a grandparent or a parent to you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really exciting. Especially, yeah, because there are so many success stories already. So you're starting off on the right foot there with that.
Our focus for this whole project, and again, you know, it's important to mention this, we're not looking to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of good examples of best practice out there. And what we're doing is we're just kind of combining them together potentially for a new project. But ultimately, we're looking at, okay, you know, what are the best practices out there that exist that we can draw on?
Yeah, that's really, I mean, that's an excellent way to go for sure. So just to switch gears again, I'm just curious a bit more about some of the environmental elements of this project. So we've already discussed using shipping containers as a base for the buildings, but is it in the works at all to have any other sorts of environmental technologies integrated into these buildings? Anything like renewable generation or, you know, other kind of energy efficiency savings? And are you working with any building standards like LEED or anything like that?
So absolutely. You know, when we talk about sustainable, we look at it from a number of different angles. One of the things that I was talking about earlier was that there's three kind of things. It's your initial investment. It's going to be your revenue that you're generating and your management costs. So how do you address your management costs? You know, by lowering your operational costs through, you know, your utilities. Solar is a definite. That's something that, you know, can be put into play on a number of these projects. Unfortunately, it's not, you know, it's not great in the winter, but, you know, it does a lot more in the summer in most cities just because of where we are. Geothermal is something else that we're looking at. Yeah, and especially with the new carbon levy, you know, we're hoping to see that there's going to be some incentives that will offset some of the additional costs to implement some of these, you know, methods when we decide to build.
Right. Yeah, that would definitely help you along for sure. This is a very exciting project. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me about it.
I think that, you know, the one thing that takeaway is that, you know, these projects are moving along. These municipalities are really keen, and these groups that we're working with are doing it. They will not be able to do it unless the provincial government steps up and helps fund some of these projects. The reality is right now we've put together a proposal and submitted it to the province for $17 million for seven projects in seven communities for a total of 280 units. You know, we've heard of other examples of projects that have also put proposals in an urban center that was 80 units for $14 million. So we're really trying to offer a lot of bang for buck. That speaks to our larger belief that a dollar spent in rural goes much farther than a dollar spent in an urban center. You can accomplish much more. It costs a lot less to do things in rural communities than it does in urban centers. And again, these are projects that are designed so they will not be dependent on future funding from the government. So government funding is going to be huge, at least to get these projects up and going at the beginning.
Wow. Well, I wish you all the luck with that.
Well, the last thing I was going to mention is I think it's the first, you know, I won't say the first, but we are very excited because we have support from every party in the province on this project.
That's really impressive. And that definitely will go a long way to helping be successful for sure. Thanks again. I really appreciate your time. This has been really fun to learn about.
Yeah, well, thank you again for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cheers. Have a good day.
That was Terra Informa, Shelley Jodoin, with Joshua Benard, a project manager with the Alberta Rural Development Network. More information on ARDN can be found at www.ardn.ca.
If you want to hear even more stories like that, check out our website at terrainforma.ca, and while you're there, look for the survey tab in the menu. We would love to get to know you, our listeners, and what you enjoy about the show. Your input can influence the content we gather over the next year. Also, upon completing the survey, you can enter a draw for a chance to win the opportunity to host Terra Informa like we are right now with us in Edmonton. If you're from another city, no problem. You can still co-host from afar.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show.
Terra Informa is a production of CJSR 88.5 FM in Edmonton on Treaty 6 territory.
If you have any questions or comments, send us an email to terra@cjsr.com or tweet it at Terra Informa. Visit us at terrainforma.ca and subscribe on iTunes.
Thanks this week to our contributors Amanda Rooney, Ashley Coaches, Nat Hontar, Charlie Blay, and Lauren Carter. We've been your hosts, Shelley Jodwin
and Andrea Galvan. Catch you next week for more environmental news.
Renaissance Coffee is open at SFU. Prime Minder and his team have been serving the SFU community with great coffee for more than 20 years. If you're looking for a wholesome meal, delectable desserts, or something to warm yourself and lift your spirits, Renaissance Cafe is a place to be. Featuring fair trade espresso beverages and brewed coffee, Renaissance Coffee is open Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Well, how do you get up and go?
Listen to music and podcasts from CGSF 90.1 FM with our radio app. It's on the go.